We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 216 weeks into 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Fence and the fan favorite. You know him, you love him. He's back for another week, somewhere between iconic and psychotic, Marty Foster. Marty, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Slightly moist because it's raining again.
I'm sorry to hear that. Vince, how are you today?
I'm very well, Johnny. Thank you.
Are you laughing at my illustrious intro that I laid out for Marty?
No, he was laughing. He was laughing. Moist.
Moist. That was a nice prep session, I have to admit. That was a lot of fun.
I think you need to bin my intro to that extent. And it does upset. I think it rankles at some of the other contributors. And I don't
there's only me.
today, yeah.
Oh, yeah, today.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah,
well, you're no longer between psychotic and iconic or anything.
Well,
I don't think
I'm the fan favorite. I imagine that some of the
to all the American women that only tune in on Fridays.
Yeah, but this isn't.
Have you seen American women?
This isn't video, is it? They'd soon be running a mile as soon as they saw the old and wrinkly man.
Wearing that hat. You wear that hat so well.
Yeah, that is a nice hat, I have to say. You didn't wear that one in Australia, did you?
No, because it was in the shed here, back on the shelf. I put this on because I was having a bad hair day. Once we turned the video on, I realized what a mess. Yes, there is. There's a whole shelf. I actually built that shelf, but you can't see it because there's so much stuff on it.
When did you go to Australia?
Oh, here we go. All week since the last podcast with you. I've been checking myself before I say anything, you know, because everyone's going, oh, how was your holiday? And I was like, oh, did I mention I went to Australia? And that has become the new thing between me and my good lady. Whenever we start talking to other people, the first thing we say is, did I mention I've been to Australia? Make I laugh. All of us. No matter what we do, we have to occasionally just take a pause and evaluate if we're being a little bit on the boring side.
You should.
I knew you'd say that. I can always rely on you, to take no prisoners. Yeah, but I think people in general don't necessarily do that. And I've got friends who go on about the same old bullshit all the time. I've heard this from one guy. I've heard the same story about a LARP event they went to decades ago. And for some reason or another, because we talk about these kind of things, that story will come up. And his wife digs him straight in the ribs with her elbow to stop him every time he starts. Anyway, where are we going? What are we going with today?
Well, I thought that I would let you just lead off, and we would take our cue from you, because I do have some things lined up. I was asking about a particular individual in prep. We'll get to that very shortly. I've got some audio of that. But nothing involving religion. I did run an idea past you in prep that I want to discuss with you in the future, something that predates religion. I thought we would have that conversation because we always talk about religion. We always go back and forth about religion, but we never talk about what happened before that. So that'll be a conversation. I think an interesting conversation for a future date.
Well, just very quickly, and I'll just leave this as a statement, and you can come back on it if you want. I think human beings put too much store in what we've come to know as civilization and society. From an anthropologist point of view, which I'm not an anthropologist, but then again, most people are not, but we still have an opinion on how man, when I say man, I mean humans, have evolved. And the other thing is, from a sociologist point of view, how society works. And we are not that far away from nature. And in nature, you get things like when a lion takes over a pride, he will kill all the cubs from the previous head of the pride. You get chimpanzees and great apes that will tear their children, or sorry, not their children, but children from the previous patriarch to pieces. And someone posted a lovely little video this morning, early morning, the sound of a babbling brook, a view over the trees, and you could hear all the bird song. And what the bird song is mostly saying, and this is why I never understand why people think it's so beautiful, it's saying, that's my tree, f*** off. This is my tree, get out. I don't want you anywhere near my tree, do one. That's what bird song actually means. So, yeah, I think we put far too much reliance and store in society and civilization.
I see.
And this cut, these thoughts are triggered by listening to our podcast, listening to Melissa, listening to Neil, and talking about tribalism and anarchy and those kind of things. And yeah, I don't know if you've got anything to say on the subject, but I think
so you're talking about the kind of the unreal civilized element of civilization.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's the only plastics. It's only held in check by the law. And if
which with COVID, that was out the window.
Yeah. And if the law can be changed at the whim of the most powerful people that we've elevated in society, our politicians, then it's meaningless.
It's kind of the opposite to nature, because in nature, you have to fight to get to the top.
Yeah. And they are totally protected by laws. And these laws have been formed over centuries into something that protects those that are already on the top of the heap. Mm. There was an old comedian called Mike Harding. You must remember Mike Harding.
Yeah. Northerner.
Northerner.
Folk singer.
That's it. And he said he was out on the moors one day, and this gentleman in tweed approached him and said, "You can't be here. This is my land." He said, "Well, how come it's your land?" He says, "My father left it to me. It was bequeathed." "Well, how did he get it?" His father got it. "And well, all right, how did your ultimate ancestor get this land?" And he says, "Well, he fought for it." He says, "All right," taking his coat off, "I'll fight you for it now." And as soon as that the land grab had been made in the UK anyway, or what was the British Isles, as soon as that land grab had been made by the Normans and the Saxons first, and then the Normans, they changed the rules. They changed the game. You can't now get a big gang together and go and grab a load of farmland and say it's yours. You can't do that anymore.
Well, they do that in South Africa. That's what they do in South Africa, or haven't you noticed?
Well, again, it's because the United Nations decided they know what's best for Africa, particularly South Africa. And I think we'd all agree that the apartheid system was a disgusting, horrible, racist way of doing things.
Yeah.
However, you know, deal with what is happening now. It used to be able to feed a great big chunk of Africa. It can't anymore, because the land has been grabbed as a kind of reparation to black South Africans who don't know how to farm, who can't organize and it's not their fault that they don't know how to farm. They weren't trained and developed into large-scale agronomists. I can't think of any more big words to fit into that sentence.
Well, speaking of, how was it? You're just putting too much faith into civilization, modern civilization, and how we do things. You think of Yeah, you think of Greta Thunberg, right? She's fighting for civilization, isn't she?
No, she's doing what she's told by her puppet masters.
Oh, what? While you were in Australia, you did go to Australia, right? If I'm not mistaken. I think
I might have done that. Yeah. Now you come to mention it. Yes, I did.
Yeah, while you were down there, she was arrested. Did you hear about it?
No,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
She was at The Hague. She grew up a little bit. I don't know if you know this or not, but this was her. Now, of course, this is not staged or anything. It's certainly not staged. This is all spontaneous and organic and everything. You see, she's grown up a little bit there. And, of course, she's trying not to laugh as she's being dragged away by the police and thrown into a bus.
So this is The Hague.
Yeah.
So they're Dutch police, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. We always used to make such fun of the Dutch police because they actually had Porsche 911s as their police car.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
I have to, because I live here, I have to correct you. It's Porsche.
Yeah, whatever.
Any German would smack me if I didn't correct you. Any of our German listeners are now cracking me over the head if I'm not correcting you.
Okay. Well, it's Edinburgh, all right?
Edinburgh.
Yeah. And of course, the permissive society, which again is part of the conversation you had with Melissa, meant that all of a sudden, instead of being 6'4", great big muscly men in the police forces, Holland being a very permissive society with its hash shops and that sort of stuff, and a quite unique approach to sexuality, you'd have these two cops in leather drive up in a Porsche 911 and say, "Hello, I am Kurt, and this is my partner, Johan. He is also my lover," like this. And so British sitcoms, sketch shows, really did used to like to take the mickey out of the Dutch police.
The fashion,
But those guys seem to be quite big, quite scary looking. And yes, Greta has grown some, but it still looked a bit staged. She was still perfectly happy to be dragged out of that. There wasn't any alarm on her face. They didn't use that pain hold that police have started to use now.
On the wrists, yeah.
Yeah, which I've known how to do since I was 6 years old, and I've trained against it. So I'm not saying I'm looking forward to the next time a policeman or woman tries to use it on me, but I know how to get out of it. Perhaps if Greta wants to drop me a line, I could teach her.
Well, I do have something else. Speaking of dealing with the police, this is. Do you know what happens to you, Marty, if you give police the middle finger? You know, kind of like this in Russia. Do you know what happens to you?
I know
if
what
you just
happens
driving
in
by. And,
yeah. I know what happens in Abu Dhabi because it's happened to me. But no,
so I'm curious. What happens?
It was at the airport. It was at the airport, and it was just before Christmas. I was flying home. My brother-in-law, who was staying in Abu Dhabi at the time, dropped me off at the airport. I went across the road in the underground car park, and this great big 4x4 Land Cruiser came from nowhere and nearly killed me on the crossing. So I gave him the finger. Next thing you know, this guy's jumped out of his car, and he's in a Candora, so I didn't know he was a policeman, and he's trying to grab my trolley. So I put him in a little wrist lock, just a little tweak, and dropped him to his knees and carried on pushing my trolley into the checkout or check-in area.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he's there with several more people also in Candoras and said, "You come with us, we are the police." I said, "Sorry, that's my book. 2 seconds.
I think he's got a delivery.
He does. That's the book I sent him. Yeah. It just popped up at his front door. I just got a notification of it.
Yeah. In the UAE, there are certain things that are very taboo. And giving someone the bird is one of them. You can pretty much get away with anything else if you apologize. But once you've done that, it's the end, so to speak.
Yeah. And Marty was explaining one time, he says that most of the time the locals, if you're not an Emirati, if you're arguing with the locals, they won't argue with you because they'll just get their cousin or their brother or whoever who's part of whatever services or whatever, and they will cause a lot of problems for you, and that will be the end of it.
But again, it can be used, their powers can be used. They call it Wasta in the Middle East. Yeah. It's like the ability to influence things. So we had a guy who got into a lot of trouble with credit card debt, and the police turned up at the company office asking for this individual because he was going to be led away in handcuffs to jail. But one of the locals that worked on the first floor of the villa was friend of a friend of a friend of someone in Abu Dhabi police. So he contacted that person, who then contacted the police officers and said, "Okay, we'll sort it all out tomorrow. Don't get him today." And there was we had a couple of days of grace to get it all sorted out without throwing him in jail.
Yeah.
Which was a common sense way to do it.
Yes, of course.
Is that, although is he that had racked up.
Yeah, go on.
He'd racked up nearly $250,000 worth of debt on credit cards.
How on earth do you do that? I never understand how people can do that.
You buy, right.
It was in the 80s. It was in the early 2000s before the 2018 crash, and oil was $160 a barrel. And if you went to a bank to get a car loan and you were going to pay cash, they still gave you two or three credit cards. It's
oh yeah,
there's a Visa
yeah,
card,
credit.
And yeah, just yeah. in case, yeah. here's a yeah. And you know, there was when he actually absconded the country because he couldn't afford to pay the interest, let alone pay off the credit cards. And when you get a credit card in the UAE, you have to put down, they call it a friend, who will vouch for you. And a couple of the guys in the company had their names put forward, but they didn't know about it. And years later, people were bringing up saying, this is Mr. So-and-so from the second bank of Sharjah. This guy has got two credit cards with us and they're maxed out at 40,000 dirhams, like £10,000. Do you know where he is? It's like, who the hell knows the second bank of Sharjah?
Yeah, right.
It's, you know, crazy.
Hmm. I see that it arrived there. I just got a notification.
Yes, thank you.
It popped up. Yeah. Anyway, back to giving someone the bird in. You never finished your story. What happened to you?
I'll try and make it as quick as possible. Basically, I was then taken by uniformed officers to the police station inside the airport. And this guy had made a charge against me. And I sat talking with him while he was supposed to go to a nearby police station where I would be taken to sign the charge papers and they would process it. So I phoned the family and said, I'm sorry, I've been arrested at the airport. I probably won't be home today. I'll probably be home tomorrow. And as I sat talking to these uniformed officers, I said, look, this guy nearly killed me with his car. If he was a real man, he'd have fought it out with me there and then. They went, oh, you want to fight him? I went, yeah, of course I want to fight him. Being a matriarchal society where macho type men are highly appreciated, the police decided that they actually liked me more than they liked their colleague. And once I'd promised never to do it again, they put all my luggage onto a trolley, including me, and ran me across the airport to the gate, and I made my flight home. But
ooh, that's very good.
It's very nice of them. Yeah, it's very kind. Yeah. What I have here is an example of what happens to you if you give police in Russia the middle finger. Just to show that everyone's fair, everyone's treated equally under the law here. You see the individual right there. Yeah, you see, given the given the bird. Yeah, and well, you see here in just a moment, it didn't turn out too well for them. They got run down and they got beat down repeatedly by these fine officers there that are treating everyone equally under the letter of the law.
Well,
I don't think they hit him. I think that's
well, no, you just need to wait a little bit. You just need to wait a few minutes. So
I think it's being played in reverse. They're actually taking their hands off him and they've reversed the film to make it look bad. That's what it is.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, look.
And their feet. Yeah, they're just taking their feet off him.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do. So when in Russia, don't give the police the bird.
Or a window in Russia.
Or well, he was leaning out of a window when it happened. Windows are dangerous in Russia, and balconies or car doors for that matter.
All right, let's get over to Mr. Galloway. This I cannot believe that this individual was elected to Parliament. This is beyond anything that I've seen. For he was on Iranian state television, and some of the things that he's saying, I'm going to let the audio of him just kind of speak for itself, because for a sitting MP, this is alarming.
I actually think that Iran has been extraordinarily patient, more patient than I would be, for example. I've said this for a decade. Iran refuses to acquire a nuclear weapon, although it quite evidently, scientifically, could do so probably very quickly indeed, but it refuses to have one. I've said for at least the last 15 years, Iran, if I was running Iran, I would definitely get myself a nuclear weapon, because Iran is confronted by countries that all have nuclear weapons. And why should Iran be vulnerable to the ultimate military attack when they could acquire a deterrent like we have in Britain. That's the case for the British bomb, isn't it? That it's a deterrent. Well, if it's a deterrent for us, why would it not be a deterrent for Iran? I think you'll find that it would be.
So that bit there is just George accessing his echo chamber fans. I don't think that was actually Iranian state television, although it might have been played.
Oh, it was. It could have been played, yes. Yeah. But it was on press TV. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
English channel.
But he hates England. He hates England. There's no two ways about it. A lot of Scottish nationalists, a lot of the left wing politicians in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Southern Ireland hate England. We just have to get used to that idea that we're not liked. So any chance he gets to slag off Westminster or say anything against the British government, he will do. And where he's been elected at the moment, in my humble opinion, he's like a reverse Uncle Tom, because the demographic that has elected George Galloway as an MP are Middle Eastern Asian Muslims. They are not the white working class or middle class of that constituency. It is Asian Muslims that have elected him. And that's because he's a white face that speaks very vociferously against the British government. And he is more than happy to support fundamental Islam as a viable way of doing things. He would happily see Sharia introduced, and he thinks we'd all put up with it. Having said that, in recent years, have you heard me with a single good word to say about what comes out of Westminster?
No, I have not.
So you'd think I could agree with George Galloway, wouldn't you?
Not from that stance that we just heard. Absolutely not.
No. But I getting back to
but steaming up from an opposition standpoint. Yes, I can understand that.
Yeah, because supposedly the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but that isn't actually true, which goes back to that whole thing that I started this with about putting too much store and faith in society to protect you. They are using our weakness against us. They are using our democratic process against us to undermine us. And when I say us, I mean anyone who identifies as British, not as English, not as Scottish, not as Irish, not as Welsh, but as British. And it's people like George Galloway, who is basically an attention-seeking tart to, you know, that's what they'll do. They'll undermine us using our own weakness, our own democratic process, our own sense of fair play against us. I've said enough.
I think is what he's saying about Iran, the state-sponsored terror. Okay, I get that. But I think the concept is right in that if you took Iran out of the conversation and you chose another small country that could have been bullied, if you think about the reason that NATO was put together, it's because you had the Warsaw Pact that could pick on individual nations in Europe. So they gang together. Forget it's Iran, but if it was a smaller country that did have neighbors who all had access to certain weapon systems, I think we'd all be in favor of that country being allowed to defend itself as a principle.
You're right. And I think that is a very good point. And I'm not going to say but, because that means I would be actually disagreeing with you.
But.
However.
However, yeah.
Although.
Which doesn't require a comma, apparently.
That said.
What you've got with Iran is they're Shia Muslims. Yeah. The Shia have a far more expansion, conversion ideal and drive than perhaps the Sunni nations do. It's all about converting everything to their way of doing things, and that includes their neighbors. Their Sunni neighbors are the Saudis, the UAE, are shit scared of Iran. And anything, any kind of a belief system or, what's the word, ideology that sees the only way it can move forward is by expanding its borders further and further, extending its influence to anyone is dangerous. That includes NATO. That includes the Soviet Union with Putin trying to get the band back together. That includes all of fundamental Islam and indeed the Chinese. It's this expansionism, conversion idea that these sort of,
doctrinization,
So in that case, no, get stuffed, Galloway. He was only saying what he was saying because he knows that he'll get money thrown at him by the Iranian regime.
Oh, no, I get why he said it. He said it because it's red meat to his base that are going to keep in the seat in Rochdale. But I think if you took Iran out of it and you said it's a small country surrounded by people that didn't like it and they all have nuclear weapons, do you think they should be allowed to defend themselves? I think the vast majority of people would say, yeah, I don't see why they can't.
You can't
if
really
you take Iran out of it.
You can't really argue with that as an idea that every country is entitled to self-defense. And if your enemies have nuclear weapons, then you must have nuclear weapons. But
that's the whole reason the Second Amendment's there in the US.
Yeah. It's this idea of converting the whole world to Shia Islam, and certainly the thorn in their side placed there by us, i.e. Israel, has been a constant, bone of contention ever since. And it's been put there for a number of reasons. Some of them are benign, to coin Bruce's favorite word. Others are quite malicious, and that is having Israel as a constant threat within the region is a constant cause of conflict, which keeps that industrial
complex going.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, big business.
So whose fault is it, Johnny?
You're asking
the English people in Rochdale. The English. Yeah,
the English.
English in quotes. Yeah, the English. Yeah.
Can you hear the contempt that my Welsh friend?
I have to say, you're right about the Celts' opinion of the English. It's not the best. Hate is a strong word. I probably say pity is more the word that I would use that the Celts have for the English.
Yeah.
All joking aside.
Well, we did play a clip here at one point in time of the Crown Prince of Saudi, Mohammed bin Salman, and he was doing a sit-down interview with one of the Fox News guys, and they were talking about this issue specifically, saying that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, then we have to have one. So that it would turn into a whole arming of the entire region, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah, but that's why...
he's appealing to his base too, isn't he, bin Salman?
Of course, and even Galloway's fan base in Rochdale and across the country, even though they're chipping into his campaign funds and so on, he will be getting great big chunks of American dollars from Iran for speaking out like that. He's bought and paid for, and it's just more fuel to the fire. When I was working in the UAE, I had to put everybody's, if I was about to level some form of criticism, I had to spend 75% of my time at that meeting rubbing bellies, making everyone feel happy, saying how good they were at things before I could dare bring up something that wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
Because the reaction around that table could turn from cordial, welcomeness into you're on the next plane home, sunshine, in no time at all.
And yeah, you had to go to like five things. This is great. This is great. This is great. That's great. This is very good. And if we do this, we can make this great as well.
Yeah.
But if you were to level the standard against other organizations, great would not be the word that I'd be using as a descriptor, but it's the only way you can. You catch more flies with sugar than shit. It's kind of the.
I unfortunately used the wrong word, and I've mentioned this before within NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. There's a school of thought called clean language, and it means not using any words that the person you're trying to convey whatever to, whether it be a message, knowledge, an emotion, or whatever, don't use a word that they can pick on to unpick your argument. And I unfortunately said, oh, that's a pity. And they said, no, I said, that's a shame. And shame, when translated into Arabic, conjures up all kinds of bad shit. And the whole meeting fell apart. And I was lucky not to be on the next flight out, because it was, you know, I had quite senior officers sat around the table while I was trying to explain something. And I said, oh, that's a shame. We use it in our common parlance all the time. If I had have said, oh, that's unfortunate, or that's a pity. But because I used the word shame, I was on a very sticky wicket.
Yeah. Let's move over.
They probably read it as shameful. Yeah.
Let's move over to the Palestinian protests on American university campuses. Have you heard about these?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're happening everywhere, aren't they? But
yes, they are. Well, wouldn't you know, as we start tracing down some of this cash flow, guess where it all comes back to? Huh?
Good old George.
Good old George. You got it.
Good old Hungarian Judenrat.
Yep, you got George it. George Galloway. Him. Yeah, George Galloway.
He's everywhere. So,
at three of the colleges, the protests are being encouraged by paid radicals who are, quote, fellows of a Soros-funded group called the United States Campaign for Palestinian Rights. And the United States Campaign for Palestinian Rights provides up to, listen to this amount of money, $7,800 for its community-based fellows between $2,880 and $3,660 for its campus-based fellows in return for spending 8 hours a week organizing campaigns led by Palestinian organizations. They are trained to, quote, rise up to revolution. And they went on to say that the United States Campaign for Palestinian Rights received $300,000 just for these organizations from the Open Society Foundations.
So individuals, what's that working out at? About $7,000 a week?
For 8 hours. Not even a week. That's 8 hours.
Sorry, but for these people in university, 8 hours is about a week's work.
That's about a week's work. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'll do it for that. George, give us a call.
The police, though, they went into Columbia University, didn't they? Arrested, I think it's 30 plus people, threw them in jail. And then the DA, Alvin Bragg, who's overseeing the Trump trial, just released all of them.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Without charge.
DA. Yeah, it's a Soros DA.
Yeah.
The other thing I was seeing is they arrested, I think I was telling you about this in soundcheck yesterday, Vince. They arrested around 150 in New York at one of the university campuses there. And they found that over 80% of them were not even students of the university and or from out of state. So they're just being bussed in from other places.
Yeah. Yeah. Rent them up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just they get off the buses and everything's already there for them. And all of these tents, they're setting up tents in all the university campuses across the thing. They're having like live-ins or whatever they call them. And does anybody not notice that all of the tents are exactly the same?
Yeah.
Like they're not.
Yeah. They're exactly
the same. The same color and everything.
This is a big ask, but do you know what the arrestable offenses were?
Honestly, I don't know. Disorderly public or disorderly conduct or something like that. It doesn't matter because it was something about stopping
people from doing their daily education, because they were stopping people walking across the quadrant. And I think Columbia has now suspended online classes, and lots of Israeli students have to do it online. But there doesn't seem to be a big outcry against it.
This is where I was going with that. So the arrestable offences didn't include anti-Semitic hate speech intimidation.
It was probably public order offence kind of stuff. I seem to remember.
Because we've all heard what they chant at these protests, and we've all seen the way in which the hate is directed directly at Jewish people. So if the charges had have been appropriate, then that DA, no matter how bought and paid for he was, couldn't have just released them. But by charging them with minor public order offences, they can give the appearance of doing what they're supposed to do, clear the streets and process offenders, and still let them go. So, you can see just how far up the corruption is actually going.
Criminal trespass was one of the crimes that they were charged with, which is what the majority of people who were in the state capitol on January the 6th were charged with. Some of those people are still in jail for that.
Yeah.
But Bragg released all the people without charge.
And we're not surprised of any of it.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a shame that Americans, you not included, Johnny, but the friends I speak to, they don't see that the rest of the world see what's going on, and America's becoming a bigger and bigger laughing stock.
Becoming
more and more like South America with regard to Banana Republic type shenanigans.
I had a couple other things we could end on, but let's end on this one. Being the Banana Republic type, and I'm assuming that you're mixing in the kangaroo show trials of what's going on with Donald Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more that the White House is arming government agencies to silence political challenges.
Yes. That's an ongoing thing. That's happening on levels beyond. I saw something. Bruce and I talked about this before he departed. There was a rap star in the U.S. that was had his house raided and all that stuff torn apart and everything else. And we actually found the organization that did that was a bureaucracy that had been created in 2002. And we didn't even realize that they existed until now.
When we counted up, was it 15 federal agencies you have now?
16.
16. So, yeah. 16, and it was a, you know.
And they don't talk to each other. They don't talk to each other. Yeah. They don't cross collaborate or anything like that. So it's just, it's a disaster. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah. The deep state knows what's coming. So therefore they keep raising up these cadres of law enforcement government agents that, just like the IRS was arming all of those new tax agents ago and putting them through
80,000 new tax agents. And the ones that were going through in the training, if you want to call it training drills, the guy in the wheelchair looked like he was ready to take somebody down at gunpoint, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Shouldn't laugh. It's not his fault he's in a wheelchair.
No, I'm not making fun of disabled people. I want to be clear on that. I'm just saying don't put somebody on the front line of a raid.
Yeah, in a wheelchair.
In a wheelchair. You just...
Unless it's armored.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Sorry, Vince. Vince, you were going to say something and I interrupted, mate. I'm sorry.
I can't remember what I was going to say.
In that case,
I haven't seen the picture. I've got lots of mental images of a IRS agent.
You don't want to know. I'll pull some of that next week. We can get into that because that's just a laughing stock. But
what I was going to say was a lot of these organizations that, like the CIA, FBI, they also seem like they're not accountable to the government.
No,
they don't have to answer questions.
No, they're not. And whatever answers they give, the heads of them, like Brennan, for example, if he's dragged before a House committee or a Senate committee, it's just cookie cutter answers. It doesn't actually mean anything because he's not going to be charged with anything.
And the politicians go out of their way to make it a very simple yes or no answer. And they say, thank you for the question. I'd like to. And then they just start talking because all they're going to do is run down the guy's time because they're not going to say yes or no.
And they, I've seen a lot of those, and they are given, I'm absolutely certain of the fact, they are given top cover by the administration to totally mess with the senators that are asking the questions, because those senators are not part of the Democrat Party. They're Republicans that are asking those questions. You never see a Democrat asking those kind of questions. And if they did, they'd be getting those yes or no answers.
If you watch the proceedings, and it doesn't matter which party's in power. If the Democrats were in power, they were asking people who they think seem to be on the right, they'd be asking the hard questions that the Republicans are asking now. And the Republicans would be doing a long explanation of how you do a good job, and it's all, you know, your feet are held to the fire, and what can we do to make it better, and thank you very much, and that's it for their 15 minutes.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who's in power; it's exactly the same.
The same kind of belly tickling that you and I both had to do in the UAE.
Mm-hmm.
Vince, I'm going to send you as soon as we finish, I'll clue you in on all the details, but I'm going to send you testimony of the Senate Armed Services Committee from last year on the threats that are taking place from northern and southern U.S. commands. So you've actually got the actual generals of northern and southern, NORTHCOM and SOUTHCOM, actually testifying, the Senate Armed Services Committee talking about the actual threats that we're facing, and all of this is being ignored. We're just not paying any attention to it. I'll send you the transcript. There's video and transcript. I'll send you that. It's about an hour, so I mean, if you have free time some evening, you can watch it, and we can talk about that at another time. But paying attention to keeping with the domestic things, We're going to end here in just a minute, but we're paying more attention and we're lending more credence to dealing with the supposed domestic problems of American citizens that actually don't exist largely, or the ones that do exist, such as the ones we were discussing before, are already taken care of by the networks that they have in place via the Soros groups and everything else to make sure that those charges, you're just creating a recipe for lawlessness at that point. But this problem of the U.S. southern border, we're not even paying any attention to that. And that has to do with the testimony that I'm going to send you that you can take a look. This plays right into that. We've been picking up, I think we've grabbed somewhere that we know of now between the neighborhood of 200,000 and 300,000 Chinese nationals that have come across the U.S. southern border. And just in the last 6 months, that number has now increased by 7,000%. And we're not paying any attention to this at all. Now, I'm just saying from my own research, from that standpoint, if you have that many nationals that are coming in between the ages of 18 and 35, that's military fighting age, if I'm not mistaken, typically.
Yeah.
If you've got that many nationals coming in, foreign nationals coming in of a particular country into another one, I would say that that is a recipe for some type of internal sabotage within a very short period of time, if you're putting that many people in.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility, because was it in New York where they found a Chinese police station, where any issues that were going on in Chinatown that needed to be handled legally, instead of going to the New York Police Department, they would go to the where the Chinese police had their offices in Chinatown.
Yeah, and nothing was ever done about
and
that.
And no one knew about it. No one knew it was going on. There was a chief of police.
For over 10 years, it was there.
To be absolutely even-handed, there's sections of New York which have Hasidic police and emergency responders. So you've got this kind of acceptance of that it's not a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not everybody's equal. Some people have got other avenues of approach to take to get either justice or help. And it's based on their ethnicity or religion rather than their national identity. And it's wrong. But again, it's what happens with societies. And we come to rely too heavily on society being a fair and equitable thing to live in. And human nature, in my humble opinion, doesn't help that happen.
Well, gentlemen, it has been a fascinating conversation. We will have to do this again. So we'll see you all next week. And we will go ahead and jump out of here for the day. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.